Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm live. I'm going to do some heavy news today. Don't worry about it. But I got to start out with today's lunch. Today's lunch was very pleasant. I went and ate alone in a Chinese restaurant and sat in the outdoor garden, and there was one other customer. I ate my meal. It was very good. So then the bill comes with the fortune cookies. And I don't eat them because I know they're made of lard, you know, but I open them. Who can resist? I mean, you know, since you're a kid, you open fortune cookies and you laugh at them. I open it up, and there's nothing inside, no fortune. Then this is the first time in my life I crack open a fortune cookie, and there's no paper inside. So I got a little freaked out because, like, going through the health thing now and, like, and I was reminded of the scene in Touch of Evil.
What's my fortune? You've been reading the cards, haven't you?
I've been doing the accounts.
Come on, read my future for me.
You haven't got any.
What do you mean?
Your future is all used up. Why don't you go home?
I still got chills up my spine from that scene. Orson Welles, Marlene Dietrich, and Touch of Evil, one of the great movies of all time. But, I mean, ever since I saw that your future is all used up thing, I've been a little, like, spooked. So, like, I open a fortune cookie and there's no paper in it. So I don't want to, like, spook myself. So I call the owner over, David. I said, David, let me ask you something. I've been eating here for many years off and on. I've never had a fortune cookie without a fortune inside. Is this good or bad luck? I knew what he was going to answer right away. I said, is it good luck or bad luck? He says, oh, very good luck. What? I said, hold it, David. All right, before you give me the Chinese malarkey, I know what you're going to say. He says, your future is so good that nobody can write about it. He laughed hysterically. David, David's a great guy. I said, what is this? He says, it's nothing. He said, mistake in the factory is what it is. So he goes and gets me a second fortune cookie. I swear to God, I crack it open. There's two paper fortunes in it. Two. First there's none. Now there's two. First one says, you are highly social and fat. The second one says, strike while the iron is hot. So I'll do that right now with a little break. Give me some music, and then I'll read you some good stuff here, some news that will get you crazy. Don't worry about it. Savage Nation 101, one from the heart. But I want to soothe myself with a little nice music here. I think this is Mandarin music. It's not Hunan music. I want to read you a little editorial I wrote today called Oil for War, and it's on michaelsavage.com. That's right, not war for oil. Remember the libs in the beginning of the war were running around bumper stickers that said, no war for oil, no war for oil. And by the way, as a side note, the very same psychopathic, lying, yellow belly scum libs who scream against the war now want us to go to nuclear war with China over a torch. Did you ever ask them that? What do you mean free Tibet? How? With a nuclear exchange with China, you schmucks? As what I want to say as I'm riding on the highway, I get so incensed. The very same schmucks who say, bring the troops home now, no war, no war for oil, are saying, free Tibet. How? Presto magico? What would you like, a nuclear exchange with Beijing, you morons, you? And this proves beyond a reasonable doubt that liberals really are insane. There's no logic in there. I don't care how much money they may have greenmailed or hedge fund or bet against companies to make. I don't care how rich they are. Most of them are psychopathic because of the marijuana and the genetic inheritance that they have. But having said that, instead of writing War for Oil, I today composed an editorial called Oil for War. You can read the whole thing on michaelsavage.com. I'm going to read it to you. For years, I've been calling for Iraq to pay us back for the cost of liberating them from the torture chambers of Saddam Hussein. Iraq's sustainable oil production capacity is almost 3 million barrels per day. The earth beneath Iraqi sands holds more than 112 billion barrels of oil, the world's second largest proven reserves, and unexplored regions could yield an additional 100 billion barrels, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Iraq also contains 110 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, and yet this war has nearly bankrupted our treasury. I was surprised to hear Senator Carl Levin, a liberal Democrat from Michigan, call for this very idea at the Petraeus hearings this week when he said, "We need to put continuous and increasing pressure on the Iraqis to settle their political differences, to pay for their own reconstruction with their oil windfalls, and to take the lead in conducting military operations," close quote. It is fascinating to hear a liberal congressman repeat my idea, while the so-called conservatives, the Whig party of our time, the Republicans, continue to pump money from American taxpayers to support this unpopular war instead of pumping Iraqi oil. We have spent $500 billion, half a trillion dollars so far, on making the Sunni Triangle safe for democracy, but it hasn't even kept our own Marines safe from prosecution. The month that President Bush was sworn into office, gasoline was $1.40 a gallon. This week, gas is averaging $3.30 a gallon and near $5 a gallon in Los Angeles. $2 a gallon more for the war on terror. Make the Iraqis foot the bill for their own liberation. When the Republican Party stops depleting the tax base for this endless war, Iraq's oil can be used to rebuild their country and pay us back. Now it is time for the 24 million liberated Iraqis to pay back their liberators with the one resource they have, oil. Oil for War by Michael Savage. Agree or disagree? No, what are you going to say? You disagree with me? Well, how could you disagree with that logic? If you do, you make no sense. Why should they not pay us back? I remember saying this on Monday, and then on Tuesday, there were the Petraeus hearing, so-called. It was just grandstanding by the libs. And Levin said this. Of course, he didn't call for them paying us back. He said they should pay for their own reconstruction. But it's more than the Republicans have said. See, the interesting thing here is that I know I'm being listened to because I see some of my phrases appearing in various political speeches. The Democrats are much smarter and more sensitive to the winds of the American people, including me, a conservative, than are the Republicans, who are absolutely tone deaf. They could give a you-know-what less about anything I think or you think. They live in their own world. All they're interested in is sucking the tax base until there's nothing left. They remind me of Mr. Nowhere Man in the Yellow Submarine until eventually the beak that was sucking up everything on Earth sucked his own foot in it and he ate himself. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com has my brilliant editorial, Oil for War. Dan, Salt Lake City, you're the first up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Mike, you are absolutely on fire. I love everything you've been saying for the last 2 weeks. You're absolutely right. Well,
maybe illness is good for me.
Maybe it is.
It's definitely cleared up a lot of extraneous desires, I'll tell you that.
Whenever I get sick, I lose like 10 or 15 pounds. I love it.
Would be one benefit, but I'm unfortunate. You know, there's an old saying, starve a fever, feed a cold. Well, I have neither a fever nor a cold, and I'm gaining weight.
Man, I got to think about that one. What I called to say was, gas and oil were at a certain price when we went into Iraq, and we should freeze it at that and take the profits off the top.
I don't understand that. Well, no, excuse me, Dave, Dan, I do understand why the Bush administration is not pushing for oil for war. They do not want to compete with the supply and demand that has made so many of their contributors in the Seven Sister Oil Companies so very wealthy. Do you understand?
I do, absolutely.
Of course you know. What are you kidding me? Dave's no dummy. Phone number's here, 1-800-449-8255. It is the Savage Nation. We could talk about oil for war. There's another topic I'm going to talk about in this hour, which is the Chinese torch relay. I saw the schmucks in San Francisco climbing the Golden Gate Bridge in another one of their impotent, pathetic protests where there are no consequences. But again, I have to ask you something. These are the same liberals who say no war, end the war, get out of Iraq, bring the troops home now. And they say what? Liberate Tibet? Free Tibet? How? They want a nuclear exchange with Beijing? If war with China over Tibet is okay, why not war against Al-Qaeda everywhere on Earth? Doesn't this finally prove that liberalism is a mental disorder? Did you witness the protests, particularly those here in the San Francisco area? Did you agree with them? Do you agree with the protests against the Olympic torch? Yes or no? Phone number 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
Oil for War by Michael Savage. For years, you know, I've been saying it. No one listened to me. Well, apparently someone's been listening to me. Certainly not the dunderheads called the Republicans. Certainly not the tone-deaf John McCain, who goes on the show The View, one of the most vile group of fetid women I've ever seen in my life, including that creature from the Black Lagoon, who I every time I see her, I feel like getting a brown soap bath, that old yenta from the Copacabana, wherever her father ran. I can't stand her. And McCain goes on that show, but he spits in your eye, and he wants you to come out and vote for him. I got another guest coming for him. He's committing Harry Caray. Every time I see that creature from the Black Lagoon there, what's her name? I can't remember her name. I have a mental block. What's her name? Beowulf. That old woman there that should be in the in mesh stockings outside the Holland Tunnel at 4 in the morning. Barbara Walters. Every time I see her, I imagine some old dried-up creature outside the Holland Tunnel at 4 in the morning trying to peddle her wares. I mean, it's awful. Creepy. And yet McCain goes there. It's unbelievable to me. I'm surprised Whoopi Goldberg didn't say, I don't want to do the old cracker. I wouldn't do him. I wouldn't do him the old cracker. What is wrong with these Republicans? You know, they make me sick. Here I am a conservative. These people actually make me sick. How stupid they are. How out of touch with reality they are. How elitist they are. And frankly, how insulting they are to the base that put them in power to begin with. But that's why I wrote Oil for War. But so Levin, one of the most liberal Democrats of all, who I agree with virtually nothing he's ever said, comes up with half of my idea. But I want to remind you of something. In my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, which is still my best title, because it defines the disease perfectly and nobody can improve upon it. In other words, you see liberals saying, basically, go to war with China over Tibet. And you scratch your head and you say, how could pacifists say a thing like this? What do they mean, free Tibet? That means a nuclear exchange with Beijing? So you say it doesn't make any sense, and you're perplexed. You said there's only one answer. Liberalism is a mental disorder. That's why a guy like Richard Gere could put down his gerbil to pick up the torch for a day, because there's no rationale in their head, you know? So anyway, it's a good idea, Oil for War. Will it happen? I don't know. The Chinese torch, a disgrace. Did you see what the Parisian socialist did? They pelted a supporter of the torch relay who was in a wheelchair. They pelted him with water bottles, the good liberals. You know, they're always very good liberals. W.O.R., New York. W.O.R. in New York City. Reuven, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, Dr. Savage. I agree with you totally. We should definitely get back at least some of the money paid to liberate the Iraqi people, but it's never going to happen, unfortunately, and here's why. I think that America, unfortunately, doesn't have the guts to go seize the refineries and seize the oil drills and take some of the money back, because it wouldn't look too good in the eyes of the Europeans, who apparently are more interested in pleasing than our own.
We don't care. I mean, forget the Europeans. Who cares who they are? What do you mean by Europeans when you say Europeans? Who are they? A bunch of child molesters in The Hague? What do you mean Europeans? Who gives a darn what child molesters in The Hague think of us?
George Bush. That's who.
Well, I understand George Bush is concerned about his so-called legacy. Let me tell you something. He already has his legacy, which is the dumbest president in American history, who dragged us into a war that he couldn't get us out of. He busted the banking system, broke the financial system, broke the borders, broke our language, and broke our culture. That's his legacy. That's all. Do you know that in Iraq right now, our troops are paying over $3 a gallon for gasoline to fill up our trucks and our tanks? And the Iraqis are paying about $1 a gallon. These are the people we liberated from the torture chambers of Saddam Hussein. So don't think it's happening for no reason. It has nothing to do with being nice. If you actually believe that the Republicans who have the audacity to go to war give a rat's behind about what world opinion is of them, you are mistaken. There's only one quotient that operates in the minds of the Republican Party, the dollar sign, the bottom line. All that matters to them is that they keep the price of oil as high as possible and the price of gasoline at the pump as high as it can go without you rioting. They'll push it to $6 a gallon by the summer in some places in America. What are you going to do about it? They know you got no power. What are you going to do, stop driving? They'll laugh. What do they care what you say or do? This is not a country of the people, by the people, and for the people in the sense that it was created to become, to be. We are living in a tyranny as though King George is still running the country right now. It may as well be King George of England dictating policy in America for what we get out of this government in terms of what we, the people, are saying. We say, close the borders. Stop flooding us with illegal aliens. Everything we say to them, they give us the middle finger. It may as well be King George. And the problem here is that you look at the Democrats who are trying to position themselves as populists, and they aren't. We know who Hillary Clinton is, a grifter of the lowest order. Her and her husband made $107 million since they left office. Great. That could give you some idea what she's going to do for you, the average person. So who's left out of the triumvirate? Barack Hussein Obama, the most liberal leftist senator in American history? You want a far leftist running America? I don't. So there's our choices. That's the problem. That's the problem. It's as simple as that. Now, that's why I wrote Oil for War. I wrote it because it makes good sense. But remember, this is not the first time I've called for reparations for our giving this. How much do you think it costs this country a year to medicate, to house, to educate the illegal alien population? $500 billion a year, $500 billion, $300 billion, $20 billion. Well, no one seems to know. But the cost of carrying 30 million people and their offspring is very high. So I said, let's balance the scales. Again, in my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, which I'm not selling, incidentally, to you. I'm telling you what I wrote. It was a chapter called Oil for Illegals, where I said Mexico is sitting on one of the largest reserves of oil in the world. We don't even need tankers. It will free us from the tyranny of the Arab oil lobby. Why don't we demand one barrel per day for every illegal in the country, 30 million barrels a day, until the debt is paid for? Answer, because the Seven Sisters do not want the price of oil to go down.
Savage.
To think about the wide appeal of the Savage Nation, you know, I'm stuck in a poor time slot when you think about it. I'm on some very good stations, but whatever. And I'm trying to think about, I'm never mentioned, I don't exist. They take minuscule liberal talk shows that no one ever heard of, and they talk about them and all that. And yet I have a phenomenal following, four bestsellers and a huge website and all of that. It's because the people know the truth, and they hear it. But, you know, there's another element that I got to tell you about, because someone was asking me the other day, what do you think your appeal is? I said, I'll tell you what it is. First of all, if you speak with a sense of reality in this world of corporate BS, people are going to flock to you if you know what you're talking about. Secondly, I'm highly educated, so I back up my opinions with facts. But there's another element, and it's an emotional element. What you're hearing from me in my voice on my show for these 15 years, those of you who've listened, is the voice of your father, the voice of your grandfather, the voice of your uncles. In essence, I'm really the voice of the real America. I am the voice of the true America. This is the voice that is suppressed by the vermin in the media. This is the voice that the creatures in the news business. The creatures in the news business that the politicians cater to. This is the voice they want to pretend doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying to you? This is the voice of the homicide detective in Manhattan from the 1960s. This is the voice of the fireman. This is the voice of the longshoreman. This is the voice of the plumber. This is the voice of the teacher. This is the voice of the priest. This is the voice of America. It's the Savage Nation. I've never actually said that to you, but that's what it is when you think about it. I've met people from all walks of life. There's no generalizing, obviously, about people in that sense. There's 5 billion people. You can't generalize about people. I've told you that I know that we're all snowflakes in design. We are all different. There's absolutely no people who are identical. I don't even think identical twins are identical, but I haven't studied them that well. I don't think there's 100% identical identicality between even identical twins, but I can't be sure of that. We're all snowflakes is the point. The point I'm trying to make is a little different than that we're all snowflakes. But there's something in common amongst all of the snowflakes, which is that in order for you to survive, and I'm addressing this to people listening to talk radio. Remember, you're a unique audience already. You've self-selected as a unique audience already. You're not the average person. You're not the kind of person that would watch The View and think that that creature that should be outside the Holland Tunnel in fishnet stockings at 4 in the morning is a serious woman. You know she's a fetid old creature. You know that. You know not to trust Obama. You know not to trust Hillary. And you also know that McCain is a front man for the very same group that got us where we are today. You know that. You understand that? You all know that? And the reason you like this show is because I speak to you the way many of you think, but you don't articulate. And the reason you don't articulate these thoughts is because you're not in the business of articulating these thoughts. They're ideas you have, a feeling, a sense. My job is to articulate what you feel and what you think you want to think, or to say for you what you can't say for yourself. Again, I'll quote a French poet that I quoted 5 times in 15 years. I think it was Mallarmé, the French poet, who said the purpose, in his case, of the poet, when he was writing, was to give more clarity to the words of the tribe. In French, it is, donnez plus clair la mot de la tribu. And I'm not saying this in order to impress you with my French, because I do not speak French. I remember certain phrases from my years of studying dialogue. To make more clear the words of the tribe, that's what I have to do for you every day. But it's not hard for me. It flows around me the way water flows around a duck. If I actually had to work hard to do this, I couldn't do it, but one day I'd collapse. At this point, what you're hearing from me is basically what I would think and say to somebody I'm talking to. You know what I'm saying? The same as talking to an audience of millions of people. It's not that hard when you really have a good brain and you've studied things long enough and you just express things the way they are. Do you know there was once a time in America when even the average man, the uneducated man, was smart enough to know what was going on and to express himself succinctly and say what was going on? He didn't need to refer to an expert. Today, everyone needs an expert. An expert they need, a grieving counselor after something horrible happens. They hire a bunch of perverts with balloons and teddy bears to come to a site of a shooting. A grieving counselor. Everything they need an expert for. I don't need an expert to know what's going on. I know what's going on. I can see this country and where it's headed. I know that George Bush has almost given us the perfect storm of basically fumbling the economy to the point where we don't know what's coming tomorrow. We could have a major blowout like the Great Depression. All we need is China to yank a few T-bills. Or Japan to yank a few T-bills. Or Brazil or Saudi Arabia to yank a few T-bills. They hold our debt. Or all we need is a perfect storm. The airlines are now sitting there with people, 100,000, 150,000 people stuck at airports. So you got the financial system in their breakdown. You got the transportation system in their breakdown. You've got the immigration system in their breakdown. Tell me what's working today. Tell me what's working. Find Waldo. Where is he? Waldo. McCain is Waldo 3. Here's a few other stories. Oil for War by Michael Savage. Voter-approved handgun ban shot down in San Francisco. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. The psycho libs tried to ban handguns in San Francisco. Well, it got pushed up to a federal court, and they said to the city, you're bigger than your britches, kiddo. You have no right to legislate this. Get back to what you do best, which is to create rainbow days for the perverts. All right? Stick to the perverts. You're good at that. But don't start to meddle with the Second Amendment. That's in our own country, thank God. How about those of you who love Islam and think it's a peaceful religion that loves you, when behind the back they're spitting in your face, you idiots? Here's a nice one for you. Kids called dogs on tolerance tour of a mosque. A group of liberals in Holland took a group of Dutch kids to a mosque in order to open them up to liberalism and tolerance. And the kids were told that they're dogs because they're not Muslims. By the imam. You think this is atypical, do you? Guess what? I don't. WOR, Craig, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Having served in Kuwait and overseas, I want to just give you a precedent that after we liberated Kuwait and stationed troops over there to protect their border and all the way into the war with Iraq, Kuwait paid for all the military gas and all the food that we ate up until about June of 2003. So as a precedent...
Isn't that amazing? So why is it that Bush Jr. doesn't remember what Bush Sr. got out of Kuwait?
So I would tell you that you know, Kuwait had to get out of it because we had so many forces over there. We were burning up a lot of gas, but they did play for the entire ramp up and the invasion. So it was a.
All right. So you could argue that Kuwait was not a broken economy, but Saddam set their oil wells on fire, didn't he?
Yes, but they, I mean, right. It was all pumping, no problem when I was there.
All right. Thank you. So there's a precedent to have the people you liberate pay for the service. If we're going to be a bunch of Hessians, let them pay for it. I mean, we became a bunch of Hessians for foreign powers here. It's not in our national interest to be there. We're Hessians. That's all. Troops for hire. So let them get paid out of their money. If you want to take that side, that cynical view, let them pay for the privilege. Now, at least it's one man's opinion. You know it has no impact whatsoever on the power structure. They could care less what you think. They could bust you. Look, they just conducted the crime of a century. They just broke Bear Stearns over their knee in order to profit by it. And make no mistake about it, some people got richer than they ever were, and some people got poorer than they ever were. I was reading a story about one of the women who got screwed by the bust out on Wall Street. She's a 65, 66-year-old woman, a tailor, who is so poor now, she worked all her life. She came here from Turkey in 1950, and every dime she had was put into some kind of investment that went up in smoke with the bust out on Wall Street. She is so poor right now, and she has no help helping her. She has to crawl up the steps in her house on her hands and knees. She can't afford any help. And these pirates of Wall Street are laughing all the way to their Gulfstreams, or shall I say their Boeing jets. The Gulfstream is chicken feed for them. The Gulfstream is nothing to these pigs, these pirates, these brigands. These evildoers. You want to know who the evildoers are? The evildoers are on Wall Street who would bust your country over their knee to suck another dime out of it. You have no idea my rage toward these pigs, how they got away with the crime of the century. Whereas if you were delinquent on your taxes for 2 months, they'd take your house away. They might take your house away. Or if your kid sold a little cocaine, your kid would go away for 3 to 5 years. But if these pigs steal a couple of $100 billion from the country, nobody stops them because they are the government. Why do you think their friends leave their companies and go to work in the government? Don't you understand how it all works? This is the opposite of what this country was set up to become. We have become the opposite of what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be a country that is of the people, by the people, and for the people, not of the pirates, for the pirates, and by the pirates. How do you explain this? That they bust out a Wall Street bank by bad-mouthing it and running it down and short-selling it. They drive it out of business so that their competitor can pick it up for pennies on the dollar. And millions of people lose their life savings and nobody goes to jail. How could this happen? How could it happen? That's because the government media complex is so powerful that to cover this up, they'll run a torch through the... Sorry, that was planned. They'll come up with this cockamamie story about a child molestation in Texas in a polygamous cult. You ever hear that garbage? They found a bed inside a church, and on the bed there was one woman's hair. Therefore, there was rampant rape. This is something that only Janet Reno could have concocted. This is unbelievable to me. I've never seen anything like this. It's our Waco all over again. The only thing missing are the flamethrowers and the murderers from the ATF. WOR, Rita, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I would like to put a smile on your face tonight. I don't know if you're aware, but
please,
we
don't
have
be
a...
an don't be an optimist, but go ahead.
Pardon?
What were you going to say?
We have senior citizen Savagettes here in New Jersey. People 75 years and older absolutely love you. They're so thrilled that you are the only one that knows what he's talking about, and they're tired of everybody shoving things down their throat. You are so
popular. The problem is there aren't enough people over 50 in this country to do anything about what's going on in this country from the pirates who are running it. That's the problem, Rita. Thank you. That's like a show killer. That's like a show killer call. I mean, thank you, Rita, but That's like a great demographic, 75 plus. That's a great, great Arbitron number. Like you're number one among 75 plus. That's good. That's great. People buy a lot of Depends and Walkers and a great deal of transfusion tree material. Great. Terrific for the advertising base. They were looking for 18 plus, and I got the 75 plus. I'm joking. I have a huge audience amongst the young. I think. What do I? I don't care. How's that? I don't care. Does that work for you? I don't care. Look, I'm not going to tailor the show for 18 plus or 75 plus or 120 plus. All I can do is do the show every day the best I can do it, meaning what's the topic that's on my mind today? Oil for war, Chinese torch relay. Those are two of the topics. There will be more as the time goes on. But I can't modify what my view is going to be based upon a demographic. I'm not the leprechaun. I'm not going to work in some liberal views that make no sense to me because they're lies in order to build up the demographic. A, I'm older than him and richer than him. I don't need the money. He does. These people will prostitute themselves for a ratings point. I won't. I see the beauty here is I've actually gotten older than them without knowing it. I didn't know it happened so fast. I became the senior man in talk radio without knowing it because inside I feel like I'm 25, 30. And so consequently, I behave that way. I'm a fool in that regard. I don't know how to behave any other way. And I don't need to modify my viewpoints for any reason. What's the point? Tell me why I should. For what reason? To build up a rating point? I don't need to do it. Chicago, Illinois. Milton, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Start with, I am a Korean veteran, combat veteran.
Congratulations. You have my respect. Go ahead, please.
Point. You should have a reason to correct it. So, let's make a...
Milton, hold on. You said what? You said a lot. You're a Korean veteran, and what? I missed the rest.
Okay. I'm a liberal who agrees with you. Okay? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I would build a quarter moon defensive position around the oil wells. I would then divide the profits six ways, one for the Sunnis, one for the Kurds, one for the Shiites, one for the allies who will support us with troops in proportion to the amount of troops. Then two-sixths or one-third we would take to support our troops and keep them running. I would charge $50 a barrel, which is profitable for everybody, and then we wouldn't need 150,000 men there. We would probably need 50,000 to 60,000 men to maintain that half moon.
Now, Milton, you're an intelligent man. You're a combat veteran. That cannot be said for our commander in chief.
Does that make sense to you?
Of course it does. That's why I wrote Oil for War. You've articulated it in a little different way. I agree with you because otherwise, we're going to be occupying Iraq for 100 years. We can't afford to do that. We're spread too thin. We have troops in Korea. We have troops in Germany when they no longer need to be there. We cannot follow the path of the ancient Roman Empire without suffering the same fate. You agree with that, Milton? You read a little history?
Oh, I know my history.
If George Bush is following the same path as the ancient Roman Caesars with legions all over the world, tell me how the scenario plays out if you know history, Milton.
The Huns are going to come in and destroy the Roman Empire. So in our case, who knows what country it'll be, but it's going to be a very populous country. Do you disagree?
Well, they're already here, my friend. There's 30 million of them here illegally from the Southlands, from the countries on a southern border. That's an invasion force. You think they're all our friends? You think they all come here to work? You know they don't. That's why one out of three prisoners is an illegal alien who came here to rob, murder, rape, commit other crimes. They didn't come here to work. They came here to parasitize us and rip us off. One out of three prisoners is an illegal alien. Tell on to John McCain. I'll be back.
Savage.
Now, just to show you something that you may not be aware of, you say, as a talk show host who listens to him, I almost fell out of my chair yesterday when I read that Mitt Romney is going into talk radio to fill in for someone, some national guy I never heard of. Mitt Romney. Now, here's a billionaire, ran for the presidency, got shafted by the Republican Party. And what does he want? Why does he want talk radio? The very same guy who would not come on this show wants you to listen to him, and he thinks he's going to have an audience? He has as much chance to attract an audience, Mitt Romney does, as Whoopi Goldberg did on radio, or one of the other failed comedians. Let me tell you something, Mitt. You can spend all the money you want, but no one's going to believe a word you say after the way you ran that campaign. You can put that in cement, in stone. Now we got another couple of stories out there. The known Jew hater, Jimmy Carter, the man who hates Jews and hates Israel, is undermining not only our efforts against Islamofascism, but he's going to talk to the leader of the murderers in Hamas. This is unprecedented in the sense that I've never known in my reading of any former president undermining an existing administration. They may disagree with them, but they never actively undermined an administration. But unto itself, that wouldn't bother me so much. Then Jimmy Carter is not only undermining George Bush's foreign policy, he's also undermining our ally Israel. He's also undermining the interests of the American people. Hamas is the very same group that about a month ago, when they sent their murderers to kill innocent, unarmed Jewish children in a religious school and slaughtered them like chickens in a chicken coop, Hamas said that it was a justified slaughter. Jimmy Carter, the great Christian, is going to sit down with them. What does that tell you about this man? It was Jimmy Carter who caused the Islamofascist virus to proliferate on planet Earth. It was Jimmy Carter who undermined the Shah of Iran, who brought the Khomeini back from Paris, and that started the Islamofascist war against the West. Jimmy Carter belongs in jail, not visiting Hamas. But again, who is going to do it? Who is going to stop Jimmy Carter? Tell me, who? You're going to do it? Your government's going to do it? We have no representation. We have none. I'm sorry. I don't know who to turn to. All I can do is tell you the way I see it, and as long as it's still free to talk in America, I'll talk. And I'm telling you, the days of freedom of speech are very close, drawing to an end. It doesn't matter whether a Republican wins or a Democrat wins. They're all going to go after this avenue called free speech, in talk radio in particular, because we are the wild cards of truth. It's the last venue they cannot control. They control every other aspect of speech in this country.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Continuous and increasing pressure on the Iraqis to settle their political differences, to pay for their own reconstruction with their oil windfalls, and to take the lead in conducting military operations.
That's a liberal Senator Carl Levin, who apparently is either listening to the Savage Nation from time to time or has aides who listen to the show. I wish I could say the same for the so-called Republican Party, because for years I've been calling for Iraq to pay us back for the cost of liberating them from the torture chambers of Saddam Hussein. Iraq's sustainable oil production capacity is almost 3 million barrels a day. The earth beneath Iraqi sands holds more than 112 billion barrels of oil, the world's second largest proven reserves. And unexplored regions of Iraq could yield an additional 100 billion barrels of oil, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Iraq also contains 110 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, and yet this war has nearly bankrupted our treasury. So when I heard Carl Levin, a liberal Democrat from Michigan, call for a portion of this idea at the Petraeus hearings, I said, great. It's fascinating for me to hear a liberal congressman repeat my idea while the so-called conservatives, who I call the Whig Party of our time, continue to pump money from American taxpayers to support this unpopular war instead of pumping Iraqi oil. How much have we spent? We have spent $500 billion, or half a trillion dollars so far, on making the Sunni Triangle safe for democracy, but it hasn't even kept our own Marines safe from prosecution and persecution. How much did gas go up since Bush started the war? The month that Bush was sworn into office, gas was $1.40 a gallon. This week, gas is approaching $5 a gallon in Los Angeles. $2 a gallon more for the war on terror. Make the Iraqis foot the bill for their own liberation, is what I say. When the Republican Party stops depleting the tax base for this endless war, Iraq's oil can be used to rebuild their country and pay us back. Now it is time for the 24 million liberated Iraqis to pay back their liberators with the one resources that they have, oil. Oil for War by Michael Savage. You can find it on michaelsavage.com. There are other stories as well, which we are talking about. Kids called dogs on a tolerance tour of a mosque in Holland. That's right. European kids were given a tour of a mosque in order to open them up to tolerance and multiculturalism. And the children were called dogs by the so-called imam in the mosque in Holland. The parents are outraged, but not the school teachers who took the children to be insulted by this lowlife. Then there's the story of the Olympic flame. We know there are human rights abuses in China. They're horrible. In fact, don't lecture me about them, because I've been talking about taking the kidneys out of prisoners for longer than anybody in the American media. Longer than anybody in the American media. So don't tell me I'm soft-peddling the terror of China and what goes on behind closed doors there. Okay? What goes on behind the silk curtain, shall I call it? Use that one. Put that one in your book. Steal it from me. Not an iron curtain. We'll call it a silk curtain. See who steals that first. See who steals it first on the blog. Savage said it first. Behind the silk curtain, they are harvesting kidneys from political prisoners. I know this. Terrible. But when I see liberals who say, no war, bring the troops home now, end the war, no war, peace, peace now, saying, boycott the Olympics, free Tibet, you have to ask them, how would you go about freeing Tibet from the grip of China? Do you want a nuclear exchange with Beijing? Would you like to send how many millions of American men to liberate Tibet, moron? They have no answer for you. They blink, they look at you the way Sean Penn writes his editorials. There's no sense to anything they say. Nothing. They make things up as they go along. It's like a roll of toilet paper. Whatever comes out of their mouth, they put down, you're supposed to take it whole because they're God Almighty. So that's why I say that's another big topic. Then there's the church raid. I am still very leery of the Texas cops who claim that there was child sexual abuse in that church. They say they found a bed in the sect. Oh, wow, they found a bed in a church? Well, if you use that as evidence, why don't you close down every church in America and say the beds were being used for sexual abuse? How do you know the beds were being used for sexual abuse? Because there's a bed, it's automatically being used for sexual abuse? I never saw anything like this. Like a mass hysteria again. Those are some of the topics on the Savage Nation. There are others. I may or may not get to them. The phone number here, of course, is 1-800-449-8255. You can find the stories on michaelsavage.com. Oil for War, Chinese Torch Relay, and Airline Madness. Was your flight canceled or delayed in the last few days? Why are the planes suddenly being grounded? What in the world is going on that the planes are suddenly being grounded? How did this happen? Do we have a perfect storm occurring in America? Meltdown of the financial system? Meltdown of the airline system? Meltdown of the immigration system? It's kind of pretty serious stuff at this point. Tell me what's going right. You know, I study this bailout of Bear Stearns very carefully, as best as I can. Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, everything I can get my hands on, and I see the biggest crime of the century. It's the biggest crime since the robber barons were stopped by Teddy Roosevelt. It's the biggest crime of the century. It's a crime that exceeds any going back well over 100 years in American history. And yet you see nothing about it. Now, why is it that you see no continuous story about the bailout on Wall Street, the bust out of Bear Stearns, the fact that the Treasury Secretary came from Goldman Sachs? How come that's not being printed in the press? It's very simple. Who is the press? Why, my friends, beware the government media complex. A very wise man gave that lecture in 1998 before the World Affairs Council. I don't remember the name of the group, but it was me. I gave a speech in 1998 called Beware the Government Media Complex. Who owns the media? Why, the interlocking corporate directorships that control the media happen to sit on the boards of the Wall Street firms that busted out Bear Stearns. They own the news media. They own the bust out. They are the bust out artists. They are the pirates and not of Penzance. They are the pirates of America. A government is supposed to protect us from these rapacious creatures. They appear in every generation and in every nation. A government protects the ordinary citizen from pirates. Every nation, every epoch in history has had pirates. Perhaps they're a little smarter. Perhaps they're a little more vicious. The ordinary person must be protected from the street rapist, and the ordinary person's pension must be protected from the financial rapists on Wall Street. That is what a government does. Now, the government's very good on stopping the crack dealer and the coke dealer, at least the lower-end ones, I must say. The government will spend any amount of money to pursue the war on drugs, even though apparently the drugs keep proliferating in America. But the government doesn't seem to be willing to invest any money in investigating the pirates of Wall Street, not the pirates of Penzance. Why is that? Because they are one and the same. The government and Wall Street are the same in this generation. There was a time when there was Main Street and Wall Street. Now Wall Street runs the world. And what they have determined to be good for them is not necessarily good for America. That is why the trade deficit is out of control. That is why free trade is not really free. That is why our industrial base is being hollowed out. That is why we are no longer able to make so many things in this country, because the pirates of Wall Street have always looked for another dime profit. Do you think they need the money? They don't need the money. They need the glory and the power. It's not enough that they live in several $40 million a year apartments in towers in Manhattan, billion-dollar buildings. It's not enough that they tower over Manhattan and lord it over everybody else. It's not enough that they have a corporate jet that costs $150 million with an interior that might cost another $100 million. That's not enough for them. Their maid may need a new Gulfstream. Their gardener may need a new Gulfstream. It's a matter of power, and it's a matter of corruption, and it's a matter of criminality. And it's time that we, the people, said somebody or some people on Wall Street who organized the bust out of Bear Stearns and profited by it, while poor people across this country have lost their life savings, go to jail. Go directly to jail and do not pass go. This is the Savage Nation. Agree or disagree, I'm here, and I'll be back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation rolling right along here? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You know the topics. You're the callers. Oil for war, Chinese torch relay, airline madness, you name it, Bill K&EW. Go ahead, please. Welcome from San Francisco. What's on your mind?
Look at yesterday, the way the San Francisco police acted like Gestapo. Look at the way the Germans ran the torch in 1936. Heather Fong and that crackpot mayor always over in China. They can't stop people from getting run over. They can't pave our streets. They can't stop homicide. It's a disgrace. And with all them Chinese flags, I know now that my city is gone. So I can tell you something. I'm well-armed. And let Gavin Newsom come to my house, because like Charles...
All right, wait. Let's stop with the nonsense. Let's stop with the crackpot nonsense. I don't even know what you're angry about. You wanted to protest the Chinese? Is that it? Gone already? They took them back to the nut house? They came in with the butterfly net already? I love that kind of caller. I have no idea what he was talking about. I think, frankly, the mayor did the right thing by changing the mayor of San Francisco. He was smart. No, he needed to expose them to get beaten up by the lunatics. He did the exact right thing. That's all. My opinion. WOR, New York City. Tony, what's your opinion? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's regarding the polygamous compound. I believe that they timed that raid to neutralize the prospect of Mitt Romney being selected for vice president because they're affiliated with the Mormons, the LDS.
Oh, my God in heaven. Oh, gee, you're a step way ahead of me. Oh, my God. I was trying to figure out why now they came up with this slam against the Mormon church, even though they're a small sect within the Mormon church. I couldn't understand why now. You may be right. It could be the left wing trying to undermine Romney. Isn't that amazing? Where'd you come up with that, Tony?
Well, I'm always, believe me, I've been suspicious of everything this government does for the last 30 years.
But wait a minute. What do you do for a living that you could think like that?
Oh, I'm a retired policeman.
Oh, thank you. That's all. Remember what I was saying to you, that part of the appeal of this show is that I sound like the homicide detective from Manhattan 30 years ago. Isn't that true, Tony?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You remind me of I used to work in a candy store when I was a kid. And you remind me of a gentleman who used to come in there every night impeccably dressed, sit at the counter, and just be philosophical. I learned so much from listening to that guy. It's like a flashback when I listen to you.
Who did he turn out to be? I'm holding my breath now. Did you know who he was?
Oh, he was just a neighborhood guy that just...
Thank God. I was afraid you were going to say something that would embarrass me.
Oh, no, sir,
so,
never.
I'm just joking. But, Tony, you were a regular patrolman or detective or what?
I did a couple of different jobs. Well, I really rather not say, if you don't mind.
That's fine. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to pry. You have every right to keep your anonymity. But your theory is amazing. Your supposition is astounding. Why did they come up with this cult thing now? Why? It was right after they were showing Romney and McCain. You're right, Tony.
Yes, sir.
Tony, that's unbelievable. I don't know what to do. I feel like worshiping at your throne here. You are the king of logic, Tony.
Thank you, sir. I enjoy that.
Thank you. Man, I told you the average person's not so average. They can outthink the politicians. Politicians have the system rigged, so they can get away with anything. But the average person's not so stupid. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. What a theory that is. Now I'm a little I should get him as a fill-in. Get Tony to fill in once in a while. I know who listens to the show. I know people who you can't really, blow a dust in their eyes too easily. Come from all walks of life. But this is how I grew up. The people that I grew up with were either first-generation Americans or immigrants. My father was an immigrant to the country, so that would make me a first-generation American, I suppose. But consequently, they had the suspicion. His friends had the suspicions of immigrants. They didn't really trust the government. They didn't really trust the society that much. They were very hesitantly Americans. They loved the country, but they knew better than to trust the government. They knew from the old world that a government is just people, and people are as good as bad as people can be. But when push comes to shove, the government's nobody's friend. And consequently, they were leery of everything, and they were cynical, and they were, I don't know how to put it, the right word. I actually haven't hit the right word of what they were. I wouldn't say cynical. They were guarded in their acceptance of the official words that came down. And I would hear how they thought and what they said to each other. And it was not limited to the group of people that were in the circle that my father came from. Remember, he had a store on the Lower East Side of New York where I met a little wider circle of people, some of whom were not all immigrants, by the way. I'll tell you right now, he owned a small, inexpensive, so-called antique store, but it was really secondhand goods mixed in with some very nice 19th century French bronzes, which he specialized in. I learned a lot about those things, ormolu, and I knew all of it. As a kid, I could tell you the difference between the good and the bad, between white metal and bronze. Between a really fine bronze and an average bronze and a cheap bronze. And my father taught me always look at a piece of sculpture and see if the sculpture was any good by the hands and the feet. He said, forget everything else. Just look at the hands and the feet and you'll know whether he was any good. Turned out to be true. Certain things he knew. But the same way that he could tell me to look at a bronze, a statue, and right away tell within 10 seconds whether it was done by a really fine craftsman or artist or a schlock artist was the hands and the feet. They could tell you the same thing with regard to anything on the planet. How they had these skills, I guess, is based upon the fact that they came from a very harsh background. Remember, they were the astronauts of their family to have gotten out of Europe the way they did and come here and then bring their family over. They were like astronauts in their own way, what they had to go through to get here. So they weren't stupid. Just because they were not educated doesn't mean they were stupid men. I met a lot of educated people. Trust me, I don't have to finish the sentence. I mean, we hear them every day on these talk shows. Highly educated, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm very lucky. I'm highly educated, and I do know what I'm talking about. And that's why the show has a double appeal. But let me go back. So in the market, I met people from different walks of life and from all ethnic groups, mind you. I met a lot of gay people who would come in and buy the antiques. They were a totally different breed of gay people then than there are today. They were not on the make. They weren't rapacious. They weren't looking at, you know, they came in. They were all gentlemen. Most of them were decorators. Nobody ever said a snicker. Here's the strange part. My father never laughed at them. The men never laughed at them. No one made a joke about them being gay. That's the funniest part, isn't it? See, you don't really know me. Most of you who hate me don't even know me. You hate your own self, your own projection of self.
Savage.
Now, there's another story. I'll throw it in quickly. There's a guy named George Soros who was probably the I don't know how to describe him other than to say he's a villain. He almost broke the English pound by betting against it. He almost broke the Malaysian currency by betting against it and provoked worldwide anti-Semitism, in my opinion. He is a man who has funded a group called Media Matters that has tried to destroy me and others in the talk radio business who they disagree with. They're right out of Stalinist Russia. Now they're going after McCain. It says that this creature, George Soros, who, by the way, should be stripped of his citizenship and let him move back from where he came from, is spending $40 million to defame John McCain. And he's hired a hitman, a former conservative who became a liberal. He's a psychotic gay man who hates the world because he's confused sexually, in my opinion. And I have a little poem for you. It's called Ode to Media Matters. First they came for the leprechaun, and I did not speak out because you were not a leprechaun. Then they came for the Christians, and you did not speak out because you were not a Christian. Then they came for Michael Savage, and you did not speak out because you were not part of the Savage Nation. Then they came for John McCain, and there was no one left to speak out for him. And the reason I'm using this crude parallel is because he's frankly getting what he deserves. The Republican Party never, ever tried to protect those of us in talk radio who put them in power in 1994. In fact, they went the opposite way, and they actually conducted backroom hearings to pass the Fairness Doctrine. It was none other than Trent Lott and a few of the other turncoats who always were questionable, who have been behind the scenes found to have tried to pass the Fairness Doctrine to put us out of business because we exposed them for what they were. So as I said, they came after the leprechaun, then they came after Michael Savage and others, and you did nothing, you Republicans. Now they're coming after John McCain, and you think we're going to go to his defense? You're wrong. You won't even come on these shows. Why should we defend you? So have a nice ride, my friends. Don't come to us, because when we went to you, you weren't there. Providence, Rhode Island, Paul on WPRO, welcome to the Savage Nation. Paul, welcome to the Savage Nation. Are you there? Going, gone. I haven't had one of those in a long while. We'll take a break. I don't mean an actual break. You know what it is? I'm reading a lot more. It's a funny thing when you're getting over something. It slows you down. I don't go out, this and that. It's like I do the show. It's like I'm basically in bed 18 hours a day. I get up and do a three-hour show. The rest of the time is spent eating and doing the other bodily functions. Basically, I'm in bed all the time. So I'm not going anywhere, really. And I read a lot. I'm reading again. It's a funny thing is because I read so many sheets of paper every day with stories for the show and scan the internet, I stop reading books. Remember, I'm a writer. I have over 25 books published under my name. That's right. No one can take that away from me. Very proud of every book I've ever written. But there came a time when I went into talk radio where I started to use the internet and stop reading books, particularly novels. I don't have the time for them. I do like movies. I don't have time to develop a plot and this. But because I've slowed down and because I don't go very far, I'm actually reading novels again. And to be honest with you, I'm reading like a potboiler detective novel. It's really good. I'm not going to give you the name right now because I don't need to promote it. But it's interesting how when you read a book before going to sleep, how much easier it is on the mind and the brain, rather, brainwaves, than watching television. I think the TV definitely provokes nightmares. Obviously, all the imagery and the flashes and the changing of the channels and the ads and the confusion. Whereas when you're reading, it really calms your brain down again. I got to tell you, I mean, I did it for many decades. That's all I did was read. I didn't have a TV in the house when the kids were young. I was like one of those people. Like, oh, no, I'm not going to have that pollution machine. Blah, blah, blah. So believe me, I know where I'm coming from. I've been around that one. But reading could be great. Just sit down quietly in a chair and read. with a nice light. The important thing is the light. The lighting is everything. As the spiritual man once said to me when I was going through bad times 25 years ago, and no matter what I did didn't work, no matter how hard I tried, blah, 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 I had young kids and the affirmative action stopped. He said to me, why don't you think about it from a philosophic point of view? He said, what is it that you really need? He said, you own your own house, which you bought with your hard-earned money. You're paying it off. The kids are going to school. You got food on the table. He said, what does a man really need? He said, a man really needs a desk, a chair, a lamp, and a toilet. I mean, he was reducing it to the level of the religious scholar, which I thought was very interesting because it actually worked in a certain way. When you actually strip away what a man really needs and what he wants, you know the chasm is enormous between those two things. We're all going to tell you with what's going on in the country, even if we go into a depression, which could happen. I don't know how it can be stopped, frankly, by what I see. I mean, I don't want to alarm you, but when I see what these gangsters did on Wall Street and how they got away with it, what's to stop them from doing it tomorrow to suck another couple of billion dollars, $100 billion out of the economy, and another few million people get wiped out? What's to stop them? The government is supposed to do it, not you. So what I'm getting at is, let's say we go into another depression in this country. Let's say Saudi Arabia or China pulls the notes. Let's say they keep printing money to the point where the gas is $10 a gallon. Let's say. What happens? What happens is you live like your father did. Instead of living like a pig, you live like a sane man. Instead of having a house and an investment house and a country house and another house and this, an apartment, and going on 10 vacations a year, you have one small house, and maybe you have one car that's 3 years old instead of a new car every 2 years. Instead of eating in a restaurant 6 nights a week, you eat in a restaurant, if at all, once a month. Your life doesn't end. It changes, that's all. You might be happier, actually, when you're not running after the golden dollar. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to die suddenly because you don't have all these things. You've just been conditioned like a lab animal to think that in order to be happy, you have to make money and more money and more money and more money and buy more things and show off more. That's not how you have to be. What do you actually need? Think about it. Just think about what you actually need as opposed to what you've been conditioned or brainwashed into thinking you should have to feel like you've achieved something in our society, you know. There was another, I remember reading a lot during that period too. I had a lot of insomnia because I was worried all the time, you know, what's going to happen with the kids and why did they do this to me? I earned this degree. Why are they keeping me out just because I'm white? What kind of society? I mean, if you let the grudge start building up in you, you become psycho. So I started to read a lot more philosophy. And I read a lot of Chinese philosophy that was translated into English. And some of the ancients were amazing because the same things were going on in ancient China that are going on now. They were eternal, the same problems. And some were written by brilliant but poor men. They called them poets. I don't know whether they were poets, but they wrote beautifully. And they wrote things such as, eating late is better than eating meat. I thought that was fantastic. Eating late is better than eating meat. Now, that almost makes no sense to an American who's grown up thinking so differently than that. What do you mean by eating late is better than eating meat? What do you mean by that? He meant that if you could eat late, meaning whenever you wanted, you were a free man, and you were better off than the guy who had more money than you but ate meat, in other words, whenever he ate at regular times. So in other words, your freedom became something of great value. And so you can recover your freedom in these times as well. There were many, many, many other things I read, and they were wonderful. And I'm reminded of that phase of my life again. It's, I almost feel like Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window right now. I'm starting to feel like that character, you know, like very immobile in some ways, but extremely calm. And in some ways, feeling better than I did when I was, you know, not like that. Whatever. There it is. This is the Savage Nation. Pardon me for philosophizing on something you didn't want to know anything about. We can stick to the notes for the day. Oil for war, Chinese torch relay, Media Matters attacking McCain with the money from George Soros, and the airline mess. Let's go to the callers right now on the Savage Nation. KNEW, San Francisco. Forrest, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I'm a 25-year-old San Francisco entrepreneur, so I represent your younger demographic. And I just wanted to let you know why I've been listening to you the last 8 years.
Go ahead.
And that is because...
That's because your father forced you to at the risk of beating you up.
How did you know? No. you actually have a genuine opinion. You don't belong to a cult. You've got an impeccable delivery, and, you know, you've got fire. And I think, you know, I haven't been listening to you these last 8 years because I'm really a fanatic about politics, but I appreciate and I learn from people that have passion and know how to deliver their opinion.
Well, that's what's necessary to survive in the world, which is to, A, you know, study the issue for sure, but be able to deliver it with some life in you. Otherwise, what's the point of listening to somebody if you want to sound like a laconic politician who doesn't want to get caught with any kind of emotion, you know? Thanks for the call. This is the Savage Nation. There are so many other topics if you don't want to talk about these, honestly. There are others. I have some sound I want to go to. My favorite Yenta we're going to play. My favorite Yenta is the senator from Brooklyn who represents the interests of Brooklyn, Barbara Boxer, where she talks about China, Iraq, and misogyny in America. Can you believe this? Misogyny. A loudmouth Yenta like this is complaining women can't get ahead. I love this. Find the misogyny piece from Boxer. Hello? Anybody home? Or you dropped the ball already? They don't know where it is. Okay, they put it on the log. And you call for it and they don't find it. Is anyone there or we lost
having
the connection?
Having gone through many years of struggle, myself was a stockbroker on Wall Street. When I passed the exam, they said I actually couldn't have any clients. I had to quit my job. I had to be a secretary for it. I mean, I've gone through a lot of those things, given my age. But we have come a long way. And I could say this. In the United States Senate, you're as powerful as the next person, and now I'm a committee chair. So in my job, I have pure equality. There are many other jobs that isn't the case. And yes, we have a long way to go in our society, you know, all across the board, whether we're looking at the elderly, whether we're looking at
you lying malarkey thrower. Let me tell you, Barbara Boxer, nobody believes a word you say. You may think that people believe a word you say because you're talking to a bunch of sold-out skunks on More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks, MSNBC. Let me tell you, you're one of the most vile creatures God has ever created. You stink, Barbara Boxer. You have all this power, and you use it against the American people, in my opinion, and yet you have the audacity to get up there and say that you're struggling, that there's misogyny in the country? You stink. All I can say is boo. No one buys your BS. I'll be right back.
Good conscience go to that ceremony, Mr. President?
Because, I'm going to the Olympics, for starters. And, my plans hadn't changed. And the reason why is because I can talk to them about religious freedom prior to the Olympics, during the Olympics, and after the Olympics, and which I have done. If I politicize the Olympic Games, will that make it less effective for me to deal with them or more effective? Mm-hmm. But nobody needs to tell old George Bush that he needs to bring religious freedom to the doorstep of the Chinese, because I've done that now I'm on my eighth year doing it.
Well, now, why don't you talk to Ahmadinejad and Hamas at the same time? That's all, by the same token. I mean, why just to China and China? That's all. Here's a little story for you. Civil rights leader convicted of incest. Innocent title to the article, headline. But here's a little story for you. Leedsburg, Virginia, just came out. A jury convicted an iconic civil rights figure, iconic, get ready for this one, of incest Thursday, after concluding that he had sex with his teenage daughter 15 years ago. The Reverend James L. Bevel, 71, a top lieutenant to Martin Luther King Jr., who also helped to organize the Million Man March, faces up to 20 years in prison when he is sentenced. Now, it gets even crazier. The four-day trial included bizarre testimony about Reverend Bevel's philosophies for eradicating lust and a parent's duty to sexually orient their children. You see, Bevel's daughter testified that she was repeatedly molested by Bevel, beginning when she was just 6 years old, culminating in an act of sexual intercourse in 1993 that formed the basis of the incest charge. Jury reached its verdict after 3 hours of deliberation. Before the verdict, the jury heard only passing reference to Bevel's role in the civil rights movement. But during the sentencing phase of the trial today, the jury saw a documentary that spelled out Bevel's key role in organizing the 1963 Birmingham Children's Crusade. Bevel and Martin Luther King Jr. were leading organizers of the marches in which police, blah, 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 blah. Bevel was also a leading organizer at other iconic events in the civil rights movement, including the 1965 march at Selma, Alabama. Prosecutor Nicole Whitman acknowledged Bevel's accomplishments, but said the jury shouldn't be swayed by them. You hear? There's nothing I can say to take away what this man has accomplished, but there are two Jim Bevels. We're talking about the one who had sex with his own child. Jurors heard a phone call between Bevel and his daughter, in which he never explicitly admits to sexual intercourse, but seems to take for granted that it occurred. During the call, he explains the importance of teaching his daughter, quote, the science of marriage. That's a new one. And admits that he did not want her to get pregnant after the incident. Oh, boy. So there's the whole story. We're going to get it up on michaelsavage.com. Here's the public defender. Urges the jury to ignore evidence that Reverend Bevel led an unconventional communal lifestyle in which he taught that it was a parent's duty to, quote, sexually orient their children. You hear this? Are you listening to me or are you tired already? I don't want to read any more of this. It's disgusting. The associated pukes generally do not identify the victims of sexual abuse. The daughter is one of 16 children Reverend Bevel said he has had with several different women. So there it is. And the daughter said, the hardest part is I love my father and I wish he loved me as much as I love him. Oh, okay. In the 1960s, Reverend Bevel was a leader in the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, two of the stalwart organizations that led efforts to desegregate the South. Great. I'm very proud for him. I'm glad. I know you scratch the surface of blah, blah, fill in the blank. So there's the story. Civil rights leader convicted of incest. It's part of his philosophy. All right, we'll go to the callers here. Portland, Oregon, KXL. Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I wanted to touch on what you were saying before the break about living simply.
Yes, sir.
The Bible counsels us to live simply. And just to paraphrase a scripture in Matthew 6:33, it tells us to seek first the kingdom and God's righteousness. And if we do that, everything else will be given to us, everything we need.
Well, it can be up to a point. That's why so many people cling to the Bible. It's to soothe their wounded spirits from all the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. They turn back to the good book for that reason in some cases. But there are people who have plenty who believe in God and read the Bible. It's not just the poor, you know. Student slaying sparks debate over homeless. That's up on michaelsavage.com. Did you hear that story? The homeless. Oh, the poor homeless. Who was the one to tell you 10 years ago that if you look carefully at the homeless population, one-third of them are homicidal maniacs on the lam? Michael Savage. How many times have I warned you not to send your moronic children from a liberal school to feed a turkey sandwich to a bum in the street because he's liable to rape her behind an alleyway? I did. I'm the only one who told you to watch out for those people. You heard about this? Debate over city's friendly treatment of the homeless. Madison, Wisconsin. The slaying of a college student in a downtown neighborhood frequented by beggars has forced this liberal city to ask a difficult question. Has Madison been too nice to the homeless? Well, last week's killing of University of Wisconsin student Brittany Zimmerman started something of a backlash against the homeless filth. Police have arrested dozens of transient filth on unrelated charges as part of the investigation, but none are considered suspects in the death. You see, Ms. Zimmerman, beautiful girl, was slain in her apartment in the middle of the day in a neighborhood where homeless bums often went door-to-door looking for cash. Police Chief Noble Ray said that he believes the killer broke into Zimmerman's building. In late January, a 31-year-old man was killed in his home not far from Zimmerman's residence. They're trying to look into the transient population for that murder, too. The scrutiny of the bums is unusual in Madison. It's a city that allows homeless bums to congregate every day in the Capitol basement and offers free meals there on Sundays to the filthy bums. The homeless bums panhandle on street corners, in student neighborhoods, and in the area between the Capitol and the university. The city's welcoming attitude has attracted more bums, and some beggars are becoming increasingly aggressive, said Police Lieutenant Joe Bales. So do I need to read the rest of the story? Liberalism is a mental disorder. What do you call a conservative? Answer, a liberal who has been mugged. What do you call a hard right winger? A liberal with three children. What do you call an arch capitalist? An ex-Marxist with four children. What do you call a member of the Savage Nation? A realist who knows what needs to be done to straighten the nation out. This is the leader of the Savage Nation, Michael. Be here or be absolutely, hopelessly stupid.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Round three today of the Savage Nation, and please read Oil for War by Michael Savage, because it's pretty brilliant. I must say so myself. It's something that you would come to expect from a man as insightful as I am, and something that you are sure will be ignored by the administration that wants to see how long they can milk and mulk the public. M-U-L-C-T, the public. Great word. My father taught it to me. He was a cynical guy, and he said, he says, those rich guys, they mulk the public. I said, Dad, what do you mean mulk? You mean milk? He said, I didn't say milk. I said, mulk the public. Never went to college. In fact, I don't think he graduated high school. I'm not sure. But the man read incessantly and loved words. And I suppose I have to thank him a bit. Of course, I haven't seen him in a while. He passed away in 1970. But you'd be surprised what you learn here and there. Anyway, he was a tough old bird. And he told me about the rich mulking the public. And I suppose that will explain why, although in Bush Sr.'s war against Kuwait, to save Kuwait from Saddam, Kuwait paid for the war with oil, but not for old Junior. Don't ask old Junior to tell Iraq to pay for the war, because this is a different time and a different place. And the Seven Sisters don't want more oil on the world market. They're real happy with the profits they have. And now we turn to some of the sound bites I haven't played. I'm going to give you a verbal Rorschach, an audio Rorschach, rather, of the world. The first is Elton John, that fat degenerate, calling America misogynistic at a fundraiser. The second is Michelle Obama referring to her husband, Hussein, as an accessory. The third is Madeleine Halfbright on a comedy show attacking America. And the fourth is John McCain saying something I don't even understand. Listen.
I never cease to be amazed at the misogynistic attitude of some of the people in this country. And I say to hell with them.
I'm a big fan of accessories. I'm married to one.
She'd make a great
Just
first
kidding.
Lady.
I really do think that our reputation is so bad at the moment that the next president is going to have to do a lot to restore it so that
Let me
you
guess.
Feel
restore
safe.
Restore it to what it was like under the administration that you served. Let me just guess. Say 92 to 2000.
Something like
Somewhere
that.
In that era.
Like that.
Anywhere in those 8 years would be
Absolutely.
Fine.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying.
Right.
All of us condemn the brutal repression that the Chinese inflicted on the Tibetans, protesters, and we're very concerned about it. So if I were him, I'd keep all my options open.
See, McCain is saying nothing. He's babbling. Middle of the rotor, not exciting his base. In fact, he's alienating them. And that's it. What else can you say? You got Michelle Obama referring to her husband as an accessory. She'd make a heck of a first lady. Not of the United States of America, but she'd make a great first lady, perhaps of, well, not the United States of America. Elton John calling America misogynistic, that fat degenerate. Who is he to call this country anything? Let him go back where he came from. And it ain't the Lincoln bedroom. Then, of course, Madeleine Halfbright is a war criminal in the minds of millions of people in the world for what she did to the Serbian people. Madeleine Albright belongs in an orange jumpsuit. But, of course, the best she can do is go on to Comedy Central. And then, of course, there was McCain saying something about something, but we don't know what it was. Coming up next shortly will be a story about Muslim homeschooling right here in America with Jeff Kuhner, an interview I did earlier. And what's interesting about this, and I knew this would come around to bite us, is that when the state of California came out against homeschooling a few weeks ago, they said, well, the parents need to have basically an approval by the state to homeschool. On the face of it, many of you got very angry saying, well, they're just trying to put homeschoolers out of business because they don't like the children being taught what the parents want them to learn. They want to indoctrinate them. And that's certainly true up to a point. But little did you think this through, because had you thought it through, you'd realize that there's a certain positive aspect to this as well. What are you going to do with people who are homeschooling their children to conduct jihad? What are you going to do with people like these Muslims that Jeff Kuhner is going to talk about, who are teaching their children to hate Christians and Jews at home? Tell me how you're going to deal with that one. And so you got to understand that there's a plus and a minus to virtually any issue if you actually think about it. Don't think about it too long, because then you'll become paralyzed and you won't be able to make a decision. But there it is. Those are some of the ideas. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, a little examined aspect of Islamofascism and their march against us is how extremist Muslims right here in the United States educate their children. You see, Muslim homeschooling is becoming a serious issue across the country, and Jeff Kuhner of Insight Magazine is here to talk about it. Jeff, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk with you again. Thanks again for having me on the show.
So, homeschooling is being used as a shield to teach holy war, jihad?
What I have found through my own investigations is that in Lodi, California, there is a growing homeschooling community being used and practiced by Pakistani Americans, many of them of Muslim descent. Now, Michael, I just want to state right off the top of the bat, I am generally in favor of educational and school choice. Generally, I think homeschooling is a very good alternative to the decrepit and, I think, evil public school system that has been decimating our children for the last several decades. What concerns me, though, about some of the homeschooling trends that I've noticed in Lodi, California, is that they're not being used simply as an alternative to a lot of the social ills that we're seeing in our public schools. Rampant drug use, promiscuity, a dumbing down of the curriculum, peddling condoms to our children, these sorts of things. What you're seeing is that many of these Pakistani-American families, and this is not just my assessment, this is also the assessment of the New York Times, which did an investigative piece on the homeschooling phenomenon in Lodi, California, is that many of these Pakistani-American parents are using it as a way to subordinate their women, to deliberately segregate themselves from American society, and to perpetuate their ethnic and religious identity, and really not to assimilate into the United States. And in particular, what is happening in Lodi, California, is that many of these poor Pakistani-American girls, who, in fact, many of them are doing very well in the public schools, they're getting excellent grades, they study hard, they work hard, are being taken out of those schools by their parents, not because so much they want them to do even better in terms of their studies or in terms of their academic achievement, but because they believe that the proper role of women is to cook and clean for their male relatives and siblings, to be gender segregated from other men and especially from other male classmates. And so what is happening is many of these girls are basically being kept at home, serving their parents, serving their families, basically being told that their place is to get married. And so what is happening is that these girls, oftentimes, once they get through high school, get their high school certification, they are then either sent back to Pakistan to be married, or what is more common, many people from the same villages from where these families come from, even some relatives, are brought in, and these girls are then married off. And so they're basically breeding grounds for women to turn 18, 19, 20 when they're sort of at a maritable age and then married off to these Pakistani men.
So they're pulling their girls out of school to keep them in the dark ages? What are they doing to the boys?
Now, while these girls are being taken out of the public schools, most of the men are not being taken out of the public schools, or the boys. They are kept in those schools, and when they turn 17, 18, 19, when they graduate from high school, they're not being told to, just stop their academic career right there. They're being told and encouraged to move on to college. So what you're really seeing here, Michael, and I think this is very, very distressing, is that they are trying to use homeschooling as a kind of shield from which to prevent their women, and especially their young children, their girls, their daughters, from being Americanized, from being assimilated. In fact, the New York Times story quotes, I think, a very sad case of a girl called Hajra Bibi, who's 17 years old, and says, well, you know, a lot of men in this Pakistani-American culture that we live in Lodi, California, they don't like American clothes. They don't like the fact that I spend free time after school with some of my friends socializing. They want me in the home, and they want me completely culturally isolated. And so, Michael, what is happening here, I think, is a real damage is being done to these girls. They are being educationally and emotionally stunted. They are being deprived of all kinds of professional opportunities that other American women will have. They're being denied, obviously, a first-rate education. And most importantly, they are being denied true access to the American dream. They are being prevented from being integrated into the mainstream of American society. And what you're slowly seeing in Lodi, California, and in Muslim American communities throughout the United States is a gradual, voluntary form of religious apartheid or religious separation, where many Muslim communities, and you're seeing this especially in Europe, and they're replicating it here in the United States, no longer want to associate themselves or integrate themselves into the mainstream of American society. And what you have in Europe is this phenomenon of alienated, restive Muslim populations who are angry, who have turned against the majority, and who are basically looking inward. We do not want that here in the United States. If this happens here in big numbers, we will see the same kind of ethnic conflicts, religious conflicts, and race wars that are plaguing Paris, London, Hamburg, and Berlin. And that's why, Michael, what I call for in my piece is a return to the melting pot, a return to the old-style American assimilation model, which helped us assimilate literally tens of millions of immigrants from all across the world, from Europe, from Africa, from Asia, and from the Middle East. And it worked for America for 150 years. It transformed us into the greatest economic, political, and military superpower in the world. And what have we done in the last 15 to 20 years? We have embraced unlimited immigration. We have embraced multiculturalism. We have embraced an anti-Americanization model in our schools where our kids are being told to embrace their ethnic and religious identity and not embrace a larger American identity. What is leading in this country slowly, Michael, I believe, is a kind of Balkanization where you have ethnic groups living in social ghettos, fostering grievances and a victimology complex. Well, all everyone needs to do is look at the former Yugoslavia, look at the Balkans today, look at Kosovo, look at Serbia, look at Bosnia, look at what is happening in those places. Balkanization is a recipe for war, violence, and chaos. It doesn't work.
I've been saying it for years, bring back Rikers Island and the melting pot.
Assimilation and integration, it's the American model, and it's time that we returned and embraced it.
There are those in the liberal media who would say that Christian homeschooling is just as bad. What's fundamentally different between Christian homeschooling and Muslim homeschooling in the United States?
Michael, I have no problems with Muslim homeschooling. Certainly, I don't have a problem with Christian homeschooling. I think a lot of it is healthy and wholesome. It's a natural and I think very good reaction against, really, I think the moral depravity and the stupidity that is plaguing our schools today. Our children are not learning anything, and for the most part, in our public schools. Drugs is rampant. Crime is rampant. Violence is rampant. Our children are not learning the basics of reading, writing, and math. But all 12, 13-year-olds now know how to put a condom on a cucumber. It is, frankly, a disgrace what the public school system has been doing to our children for the last several decades. So obviously it's normal that Christian and Muslim and Jewish parents who believe in things like God, country, and family, who want to have their children learn the basics of math, the basics of geography, of history, of civics, of reading, and of writing, will turn to homeschooling. My concern, though, is say what you want about these Christian homeschooling compounds. What's different between them and these Muslim homeschooling compounds is they are not seen primarily as vehicles to prevent their assimilation and integration into American society. In other words, these children in Christian homeschooling areas or compounds eventually and are in the process of becoming Americans. They want to wear American clothes. They want to speak English. They want to take part in the larger culture. They want to read American novels. They want to study American history. What you're seeing in a lot of these Muslim homeschooling cases is they don't want to do any of that. They want to speak Pakistani. They don't want to learn English properly. They are basically literally breeding grounds for many of their women to get married to Pakistani men when they're 18 and 19 and then basically stand there and serve men for the rest of their lives. So my point is that this kind of misogyny, this kind of gender apartheid, this kind of discrimination and oppression of women may be acceptable in Pakistan or other parts of the Muslim world, but it should not be tolerated here in the United States. Look, if these parents, if they want to keep their children isolated, deprived, sheltered, they want to keep them educationally backward and stunted, that's their business. I mean, you know, in the end, that's their right. But in the end, they are hurting their own children, and ultimately, they're hurting American society as a whole. And that's why I believe what we need to do is not coercion. We don't need the government to come in there and tell these people what they can or can't do with their own children in terms of education. But there should be what we had for centuries in this country, certainly throughout the 19th and most of the 20th century, social pressure, a general sense of cultural cohesion, where we, as a culture, confidently and proudly say, we want a melting pot model. We want our children, all of them, from whatever backgrounds, to be Americans. If you want to be Pakistani in your home, or you want to be Italian, or you want to be Jewish, or whatever it is, in the privacy of your own home, if you want to practice your culture, your cultural roots, or speak a different language, that's your prerogative. But we also want you to be good, faithful, and true Americans. And my fear is, with some of these Muslim homeschooling cases, that's not what's happening. And it's not happening in Europe, that's for sure. And if we don't stop this trend towards balkanization, Michael, we will regret it the way the Europeans are regretting it.
Jeff Kuhner, thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great speaking with you. Take care.
Savage.
The liberal media now seems to have moved past the hateful, vile, racist remarks of Obama's pastor. But you know what? We in America have not forgotten. And what the people haven't heard is the racist history of Obama's church, which goes beyond the pastor. S.A. Miller of the Washington Times has written an expose on this topic. He's here to talk about it. Mr. Miller, welcome to The Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Everybody with a brain has heard the racist comments made by Barack Hussein Obama's longtime pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Your article says it goes deeper than the reverend.
Yeah, that's right. The church, on its website, on its official page, it states that it's founded on a black liberation theology that started with a book called Black Theology and Black Power. They cite the book, and that book includes a number of potentially really offensive remarks, including a call for, you know, a God that participates in the destruction of the white enemy. The book is by James H. Cone, who's a theologian. He's still around. But even if you were to say that book that was written in 1969 is colored by the events of those times, you know, its persistence is part of this church's ministry does raise questions about what Mr. Obama knew about the church and about his pastor and what he was willing to overlook for 20 years he was a member there.
So we're talking about what the church was founded upon?
That's correct, right. There's this black liberation theology, and it goes back to this book, which helps systematize that way of thinking. And it includes a number of really, you know, inflammatory remarks, such as it wrote in the book, black theology will accept only the love of God, which participates in destruction of the white enemy. You know, he also goes on to, you know, to call for a God that, you know, partakes in the overthrow of, by any means possible, of white oppressors. This is the kind of language that's peppered throughout that text, and it's, you know, I think it goes to show that some of the offensive remarks we heard from Reverend Wright really weren't out of the blue. They, you know, they were kind of part of his worldview and part of his mindset, and something to think that Mr. Obama would have been aware of. He has vehemently condemned these kind of statements, and he's, you know, distances himself from those remarks by the pastor. But he remains defensive of Mr. Wright and of the church. You know, so I think it just calls into question something, perhaps some of his judgments.
And yet, is this something they continue to preach?
I don't know if they push it. It's part of their ministry. It's part of the theology that they follow. It's the way that they read the Bible. And, you know, there's a lot of liberation theology. It's not to say that interpreting the Bible from any, you know, certain perspective, whether it be Latino or black or white or what have you, is necessarily wrong or questionable. I think it's really a question of this black power affiliation, which is perhaps racist. You know, it depends how you want to interpret looking at the world as one of, you know, of black people and white enemies.
Well, what has Obama done to distance himself from this, if anything?
Well, his spokesman did tell us that they vehemently disavow those teachings and those beliefs. So he, you know, that obviously he says he's not for the destruction of the white enemy, but you know that is, you know, this part of this church that he's been a member of for 20 years, and it's obviously something that is extremely central to the teachings of Reverend Wright, who Mr. Obama has called his spiritual mentor, who's been his friend and guide for 20 years, and who he said on past occasions that he has turned to for day-to-day guidance, you know, and in his decision-making. So while he also, the campaign has said that he didn't read the book, which I guess, you know, is probably true. I mean, I don't know why he would read that book, but it seems like he would have been familiar, you know, with those teachings, with some of the things that are espoused by the church.
Well, this is something that his opponents should use against him. Is there anything he can do to minimize the negative impact?
Well, you know, he needs to address it, you know, up front. I think he did that to some extent with his speech on race last month, where he, you know, he called for a dialogue on race. He seems to be at that, after that speech, he seems to just be avoiding any conversations about the church or about Reverend Wright. You know, he said he couldn't disown Reverend Wright because he was like a member of his family. So, short of that, I imagine he's trying to sit back and let it blow over. And I don't know if it will. You know, I don't know how else he can address it. We put questions to him, and they seem to avoid even saying when, you know, Mr. Obama went to the church, because I think they're trying to avoid anyone linking him up to a day that he was there, that there was one of these sermons going on, since he said that he never heard a sermon like that when he was at church. So I think they're just trying to hunker down and weather this controversy and wait for it to blow over.
Do you see these issues as being a mark against Obama's character?
Well, that's not for me to say. I mean, voters will make that decision. I think he's been less than upfront about his relationship with the church. And, you know, he's even his speech about race in America, while it was applauded for being courageous and, a bold confrontation with this racial issue that really divides in our country. You know, it's also been criticized by people, including the Anti-Defamation League, for basically defending, you know, Wright, even if you say, oh, you know, he's a product of his time and he's, you know, he's stuck in the 60s civil rights movement. I mean, that's really just making an excuse for racially divisive, you know, venomous sermons.
S.A. Miller, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It's a pleasure. I'll talk to you anytime.
Houston, Texas. A.J., what's on your mind? Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Our American society have turned our children into weak puppets They weak. They're nothing.
Weak puppets. Weak puppets. Weak puppets. Weak puppets. All they want is pleasure.
And me being in a nursing home ain't going to work. I hope the good Lord take me fast.
You know, AJ, I haven't heard a man say that since my father died 30 years ago. He used to talk like that. He never wanted to be weak and being taken care of.
I don't want nobody wiping my neck. I don't want, and you know what I mean, I don't want nobody doing nothing. I just want to get out, because if I had to depend on these children, I'm telling you, we in trouble. And I'm telling you what, if you really want to win this dang on war, I'm telling you, we got to get these bums out of there, the Democrats, the bums out of the Republicans, and the people, we going to have to take this damn country, I mean, this doggone country back. I'm sorry, sir. And I'm just sick and tired.
No, I know you worked up, because you could see they're all lying to us. They're lying through their teeth with Nancy Pelosi telling us she's going to have the most ethical Congress in history. I mean, I heard all of this before. You know it's BS.
Total BS. And they can take care of these problems, but they keep pussycatting around with these people. These people are going to put some on our butts. And if we don't stop as the people being naive, and I'm speaking of naive, I'm going to tell you why the Dems won, because the black folks, they went for the dang nothing. They didn't even vote. I seen a deal on the TV the weekend. They did a Hispanic deal. But where was the black man? Jesse Jackson's them, where were they at? Them guys.
I don't know. Well, I think that it was the same thing again, all Democrat, you know.
Come on, man. When is the black folk going to ever wake up and get their head out the sand like ostriches? They being left behind. And it ain't because ain't nothing out there for them. It's out there, man. I go to these schools and see these children with their pants off their butts.
Can you believe it? Can you believe these kids with the pants hanging down under their behinds? Can you believe that this country would let that happen? I wouldn't permit that in a school. I go in a store. I mean, white and black kids. You see them with the pants hanging down with no belt, size 90 pants. Where is the man to say you're not coming into school wearing idiot outfits, a jail outfit like that? Go home and dress like a man and don't come to school.
I catch my son with them pants off his butt. I'm embarrassing him in front of him. He never know when I'm coming. I told him I'll break his neck.
Well, you have to say it. I don't understand why a boy would want to dress up like a jailhouse sissy. I mean, look, let's lay it on the line, AJ. That whole thing of the pants falling down is a mark of submission that comes from the jailhouse culture. Am I right or wrong about that?
You're right, Savage, but that never do. We as parents have to let this happen. These parents that lost their freaking mind. And the church, I'm telling you what, when they took the Bible out of everything and all these churches didn't come together, every church, I don't care if you're bad, whatever, you should have came together and said, no. We built this country on this, and this is what it's going to be, and leave it at that. We done chopped it up. You don't even believe it.
You know, you're right. When they took out the hard line teachings of the Bible out of the church started to die, because then they opened it up to any behavior. So what's the point of going to the church? I mean, we all know we're sinners. That's a given. No one has a halo. We understand that. But you need someone to lay down the law and say, man, we're all no good, and we're all going you know where unless we straighten out. Otherwise, why go in there?
No, we going straight. Look at our country, man. Don't nobody respect us no more. We ain't about nothing to them little pop poops over there. You know that?
AG, you and I are old school. We're from another universe.
Just don't make sense. And the people in America running around here with their high material stuff, and this stuff ain't going to be around if they keep letting these people take over.
Yeah, right? Well, I hear you, AJ. You and I agree on everything. I don't know what to say to you other than somebody's not getting the message. I'm getting it. You're getting it. But someone else isn't. We'll just have to wait and see as the Democrats implode with their corruption.
Savage.
Live on the Savage Nation. Again, you've heard the interviews. They were very good. They were very, very good indeed. The main topic today is Oil for War by Michael Savage. And that's a huge one. And I think we need to talk it up until eventually the good people who run the government will understand there's only so much they can, you know, get from the taxpayer. We've liberated 24 million Iraqis. They have 3 million barrels, sustainable oil production, 3 million barrels a day. The earth beneath Iraqi sands holds more than 112 billion barrels of oil, which happens to be the world's second largest proven reserves. And unexplored regions of Iraq could yield an additional 100 billion barrels. You got to remember that Iraq also contains 110 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Now, this war has nearly bankrupted our treasury. Remember, wars are expensive. We need to make Iraq pay for our costs. How much has this cost us, the U.S. taxpayer, this unpopular war? Whether you're for it or against it, it's expensive. We have spent $500 billion. That is nearly a half a trillion dollars. For what? Well, that's to make the Sunni triangle safe for democracy. But that hasn't even kept our own Marines safe from persecution by the U.S. Marine Corps. And gasoline was $1.40 a gallon the week that President Bush was sworn into office. This week, gas is averaging about $5.45 a gallon in Los Angeles. That's a lot of money for gas. And so when the Republican Party is told by the people, stop depleting the tax base for this endless war, use Iraq's oil to pay for the endless war, I believe we will come to understand that maybe they'll get the message. I know I've gotten the message because I'm giving the message that the 24 million Iraqis who have been liberated by our troops and by our tax dollars need to pay back their liberators with the one resource they have plenty of, oil. I'm Michael Savage, Oil for War. That's right. You heard it right. You can read it if you don't, if you didn't catch it all on michaelsavage.com. It's the lead story. In the, well, it's my little editorial. They used to call it a blog. So I call it an editorial, whatever. It's my opinion, Oil for War. Other stories up on the website. Voter-approved handgun ban shot down in San Francisco. Thank God. The meddlers who were good at perversion and nothing else were told stick to your rainbow flags and stay away from the Second Amendment. And perhaps they finally got the message that they're bigger than they think they are, that they're smaller than they think they are. Here's another story out of Holland. A group of Dutch kids, white kids, Euros, were taken on a tour of a mosque in order to sensitize them to Islam, to teach them how friendly their new neighbors were. Guess what happened when they were in there? The primary students were told that they were dogs because they were not Muslims. That's right. I didn't make it up. It's a fact of reality. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to the callers. Andrew, WOR, New York, quickly. We're in the last minutes of the show, 30 seconds or less. Fire away, Andrew. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. As an Orthodox Jewish male who lives in America, I have to say I disagree a little bit with what that what the speaker was saying before about putting America back into a melting pot. The only thing the only way I've been able to maintain my Jewish identity is by not assimilating. Yeah, I'm not necessarily a proponent of homeschooling, but if you want to completely abolish homeschooling, seems very similar to saying you should abolish yeshivas and madrasas. You know, and people need to be able to teach their religious ideals and their values to their kids, and not say that in to act like.
I hear. Well, it's a touchy problem now. It is a touchy problem. You start to say close down the madrasas. Well, then you have to close down the Catholic schools and the Orthodox Jewish schools too. So that can't be done. No, it's a little different than close them down. What you could do is say you can't teach them to hate. You can't teach them to conduct jihad. That's a little different than closing down religious schools. You don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. If you have a group of inveterate throwbacks who are coming here to teach hatred, then stop them from teaching hatred. You can control what they teach in these schools. Thank you for the call. You don't have to close down every religious school because we have a group of retrograde haters coming into the country. Close them down. Don't close everyone down. What kind of nonsense is that? To be fair, now we'll close down Catholic schools and Jewish schools in order to be fair. The Catholic schools aren't teaching to hate America and conduct jihad. The Jewish schools aren't teaching jihad and hate America. It's some of the Muslim schools, so focus on them. And let the liberal lawyers drop dead if they bring up an issue. That's what I say, one man's opinion. You know how important that is. Ha, ha, ha. Santa Maria, Joan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
My name is Joan. Joan Therese, and it's a very, very, very Catholic name, and I have got to get through to you. I have listened to you for over 2 years, and I love you and embrace you, and blah, 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 blah. I know you've heard that before, but I'm a fully credentialed teacher, and I am about sick of this educational system, and I have just about had enough of it, Michael. And I am just upset to know.
Well, as I said, don't close down the Catholic schools. They're not teaching hate and jihad. Don't close down the Jewish schools. They're not teaching hate and jihad. Close down the Muslim schools that might be teaching hate and jihad. Certainly not all of them are, but certainly you cannot permit this kind of enemy within to proliferate.
Right.
Thank you. Common sense, huh? But I'm not a politician. I'm a talk show host. If someone's teaching jihad, if someone's teaching revolution, if someone is teaching that to children to hate, if someone's teaching children to conduct jihad or holy war, close them down. Throw them out. It's that simple. KNEW, Kamal, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, hey, I 100% agree with you one on every story on this stuff, man. It's just, it's really amazing. I'm 34 years old, African-American, and I have never seen how this country just turned to be, it just turned out to be so debased as it is with the corruption, with the liberals. And I agree with you with the oil.
Oil for war. That's right. The libs used to say no war for oil, and I'm saying, you're right. How about oil for war? I've turned it around on them. I agree there should be no war for oil, but I believe there should be oil for war. How else are we going to pay back the Treasury, pay back the debt? In other words, how are we going to save the U.S. dollar and the tax base? Oil for war. They were liberated by us. Men died for them. It's time for the ingrates called the Iraqis to pay us back. Albany, New York. Nancy, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
That oil for war, too. And we also have Arabic immersion here in Canada, outside of Toronto. We allow children to be taught only in Arabic from kindergarten to grade two, and they classify it under a special language program.
Now, what good is that going to do them to grow up as an outsider in Canada, other than to teach them to be outsiders and hate Canadians?
And this is painful.
Thank you for the call. Well, liberalism is a mental disorder, but it's a very dangerous one, and it's time we rolled up our sleeves and cleaned up this country once and for all, or else we're all going to die. Unless we roll up our sleeves and clean their clock, we're going to all die, I'll tell you right now. You want me to take my gloves off and tell you what's coming? Stop talking about it and do something about it. Start demanding more than a John McCain. We don't need a shoe salesman for president. We need a leader. And John McCain is not a leader. He's a shoe salesman. He should be running a shoe store in Scottsdale. The nerve of that man. He goes on The View with those creatures from the Black Lagoon, and he won't come on a show like this where his base exists. You know what I say, John? Keep it up. Keep it up, and you'll be back in Arizona begging for your Senate seat. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be an ignorant moron.
Savage.